back to News and Views as we come to you live from the Holiday Inn. We're at the Great Plains Land Expo. Kevin Pfeiffer, my co-pilot, and now we're sitting here actually talking, Kevin, to a pilot, and Dr. Tim Ball, which you pulled down from the Canadian side of the border here.
Another great speaker, and he's going to be keynoting the 1:30 session this afternoon. And Dr. Ball came to us highly recommended by a lot of farmers, actually. They really wanted to hear him today.
Well, and you're a climatologist, Dr.
Yes.
Ball.
Yes, yeah, I have a PhD in climatology, one of the first in the world. And when I started studying climate, global cooling was the threat.
Some people already recognize that voice. Tell them. You used to live in Winnipeg and actually worked on this river before, right?
Yeah, for a long time, because I learned very early about the climate, but what's more important is the precipitation and what's going to happen. And I was a founding member of the Red River Coalition dealing, and I was also chairman of the Assiniboine River Management Board, where we were trying to come up with a management strategy for the whole drainage basin. And of course, that includes the Souris, which starts in North Dakota. So yeah, I'm very familiar with this part of the world. And I was in Hallett, Minnesota when they were talking about the drought in Devil's Lake in 88, 89, and I said, bring me back in 10 years and you'll be complaining about the flooding.
Okay, what do I need to do with my investments? you're pretty good, because you're right. Devil's Lake started, what, 92, 93, yeah. Kevin?
Yep.
And it's gone nothing but up since there, and the poor folks there have had to deal with it.
Exactly. Well, because if you look at the whole history of the Great Plains and the prairies of Canada, it's a wet and dry cycles. And the droughts are about every 22 years. They alternate. There's cold droughts where the temperatures are a little higher, low precipitation, but you don't get the wind. And then in between, you get the hot droughts, high temperatures, very low precipitation, and the winds blowing, the dust bowls of the 30s. Well, that's what came back in 88, 89. So it's about every 50 years, those hot drought cycles. And you can see that going back, tree ring data going back hundreds of years.
Are we looking at anything that's man-made, man-caused?
No. The only place where you can actually measure humans affecting the climate is in the urban areas. There's a thing called the urban heat island effect, that because of the buildings and the concrete absorbing the sun and releasing it, and cars and so on, that the temperatures of cities, and we did studies in Winnipeg back in the 80s, that the airport and Portage and Maine, in the wintertime, there's about an 8 to 12 degrees Celsius temperature difference at any given time. That's the only place where we're affecting the climate. But on a global basis, absolutely not.
So it doesn't affect the world as a whole, but in that geographic area, well.
Well, the only way it affects the world is because it's caused the temperatures at the weather stations, which are close to the cities, to go up, to make it look like there's global warming, but it's not. It's an artificial factor.
So explain to me why I have less glaciers in the world today than I did before.
You don't. That's what they want you to believe. We're only measuring about 10% of the world's glaciers, and 50% of them are advancing and 50% are retreating. See, what they do is they pick on things that they know nobody knows anything about. It's like with the Arctic ice. I mean, who knows that every single summer, 10 million square kilometers of Arctic ice melts? That's an area equal to the continental U.S. That's normal. On any given day, in a 140-day period, you get an area the size of South Carolina melting in a single day. That's normal. But who knows that? And then, of course, Al Gore comes along and says, oh, the polar bears are drowning. It's rubbish. There's never been more polar bears. In fact, in Canada, they had a conference on polar bears. And Mitch Taylor, who I've known for 30 years, world expert, lives up in the Arctic. And the Inuit, the Eskimos, as you call them, they were told not to come to the conference because they wanted to come and say they'd never seen so many polar bears. But it's a place that nobody knows anything about. Nobody knows what the natural cycles are, what the natural variability is. So it's very easy to fool them because, as your last speaker was talking about, it's a fear, playing on people's fear. And that's what goes on.
Kevin, Dr. Ball's opinions are fairly strong. Can we say that?
Absolutely. And I think he's pretty much spot on, too.
Well, and I'm from a state that produces coal. And if, in fact, there is no global warming, Dr. Ball, that makes me happy. I'm not going to lie to you. I am not afraid of good information, all in the name of, boy, just because I love ethanol. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. But the thing is that it doesn't matter whether it's warming or cooling. When they said you're a global warming skeptic, I'd say no. Global warming was occurring. It started in 1980 and up went to about 1998. Prior to that, there was global cooling. from 1940 to 1980, the world was cooling down. CIA were writing reports on how that cooling was going to impact on world food production. And now, since 2000, we're into global cooling. The question is, what's the cause? And, of course, what they did was they wanted to blame CO2. They wanted to say that it was human production of CO2 that was causing the global warming. And it wasn't. CO2, in fact, in all of the record that we have, every single record, the temperature increases before the CO2. But according to their hypothesis, the CO2 increases, which causes temperature increase, doesn't occur in the record at all. So the basic assumption of their hypothesis is completely wrong. So that's why CO2 and the fossil fuels have been the target. And it comes about because of a guy by the name of Morris Strong, who's currently hiding out in China now because the U.S. government want him for profiting from the oil in Iraq for food crisis, okay, and he made millions off of it. He lived in Colorado, but he said 30 years ago that the problem for the planet are the industrialized nations, and isn't it our responsibility to get rid of them? Well, how do you go about that? How would you shut down an industrialized nation? Well, if you think about the nation like a car, fossil fuel driven, then you can stop the car by squeezing the fuel line, or you can plug the exhaust. They realized if they shut off the energy supply that people would react right away, and you look at when the gas prices go up, there's right. lineups, okay? But if you could say, no, the byproduct of those nations, CO2, is causing global warming, you could then effectively shut down those industrial.
Have you ever been in a room and debated people that you believe are completely opposite of you on this?
Nobody will debate with me. In fact, I've been for 3 years. I was on a radio program out of Montreal. He had a standing order or request. Anybody wanted to debate with me, he'd provide all the radio time we needed. In 3 years, we never ever had anybody that took up the debate. There's a guy in Edmonton, Alberta, that's offering $100,000 to the winner of a supervised debate with me and somebody else. Nobody's taken us up on it. The only person that took up the challenge of the debate was Elizabeth May, who's the head of the Green Party in Canada, and a month later she phoned Mr. Rogers back, the radio guy, and said, look, I can't find anybody. That's the issue. It's like with Al Gore. You know, I come on radio and people say, well, what are your qualifications? Oh, you're paid by the oil companies. Anybody ever ask Al Gore what his qualifications are? No. He knows nothing, but he's out there, but he won't debate. None of these people will debate this issue. In fact, I know if somebody's willing to debate, they don't know the facts. And when you look at the facts, even basic ones, like the one I mentioned to you about CO2 going up, they're going to lose right away.
So where do you take it from here, other than to get as many people to hear your message as you can?
Well, that's all you can do. One of the things that I get after I make a presentation is, and I tell people, look, I'm going to give you a biased presentation because all you've heard up to now is a bias. Put the two together and draw your own conclusions. But there's a huge well of common sense in the ordinary people. They're basically conservative. They basically don't really trust people. And the most common comment I get is, I had my suspicions, but I didn't know enough to know. Now, of course, they've tried to marginalize me. You go on the internet and say, oh, he's paid by the oil companies, which is completely false. I've had four lawsuits, including two that I have now, which have run me $300,000 in legal fees.
Now, you said the difference in Canada. There is differences, you being a Canadian citizen, when it comes to all of this.
Well, because the lawsuits wouldn't even be allowed in the U.S. because of your free speech clause. See, people don't realize how valuable that is till you talk to somebody that doesn't have it or you lose it. And the Founding Fathers made that number one for a reason. In Canada, I have defamation lawsuits filed against me. The only way I can defend them is to say what I said was fair comment. If I do that, I can't demand discovery. That is, I can't force the other side to disclose emails and documents and so on. But the advantage of it is if I lose, the fine is usually minimal. I think the most ever was $20,000. If I say, no, what I said was the truth, then I can get discovery. I can force them to disclose documents. But if I lose, they can take everything I own.
So How far have these gotten? You said you've been involved in four lawsuits. Two are still pending.
Six
lawsuits. Okay.
Yeah,
the four that have been resolved. How far did they get?
No, they didn't. They didn't go anywhere because I just said I can't afford. I can't afford to fight them. And so I. Just
so you
said,
gave them the $20K and.
No,
gave
no.
Up.
What I did was I just said I'll withdraw what I said.
Even though you'd know it was right.
Yeah.
And you still to this day agree it was right.
These lawsuits have been banned in most states in the U.S. and in most provinces in Canada. They're called SLAPP, S-L-A-P-P, which stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. They're designed to shut you up. They're being opposed by the legal profession because they go against what the law is all about. But as I said, the lawsuits against me wouldn't even have been filed in the U.S.
In our lifetime, do you think that the people, assuming you're right on the position on global warming,
yeah.
In our lifetime, do you believe that the people that agree with your position are going to be proven right? And at what point will they be proven right?
We've already been proven right. I mean, what they've every single prediction that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the UN agency that is supposedly the official source of data, right from the very start in 1990, every prediction they've made has been wrong. And in science, it's all about prediction. If your prediction is wrong, your science is wrong, period. And what they've done, instead of going back and saying, look, well, we better correct our science, they moved the goalpost. That's why I said to you earlier, it went from global warming to climate change, right? Because with global warming, they were saying if CO2 increases, the temperature will increase. Well, since 1998, the temperature has been going down, completely in contradiction. But instead of saying our science is wrong, they went back and moved the goalpost.
Kevin, the words he's speaking here have a tremendous effect on a state like the one you and I grew up in.
Absolutely, especially with all the energy development we have going on in western North Dakota with all the coal development and all the oil development and everything taking place. And not that we're going to be able to have free rein and we can just start doing this without regulation, but I think it kind of settles the opposition down a little bit as to, you know, what type of
where
effect
I see,
we'd have on the climate.
Where I see it affecting your crowd that you've assembled in there, and every year this thing gets bigger, the Land Expo does, but if I'm in there and I'm saying, well, should I invest in this? Because, heck, the government's going to reg me out of it someday. And then you hear a speaker like Dr., you know, Ball saying, well, wait a second here. The science doesn't prohibit you from doing this. Does it take your clients now and say, wait, I am willing to invest in this?
I think it helps them make more of an intelligent decision for that particular investment.
But don't forget, the downside is the world's cooling. And for North Dakota, like Canada, you're at the northern limits of agriculture. And like a 1 degree Celsius drop in global temperatures takes about half of Canada out of food production. And as I mentioned to you, back in the 70s, the CIA doing studies on the impact of cooling because of world food production. So the good side is that you get the benefit from the oil and gas and so on, but the downside is the impact. Now, there's a good side in terms of agriculture because, of course, you now got GMOs and the ability to produce crops that can cope with cooler conditions.
You bet. I get it. Doctor, you're a very interesting man.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.